for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. If history is any guide, job growth comes only after a recovery is well underway. But perhaps this is not a normal recovery, and perhaps there is something that can be done now to help the millions of Americans currently out of a job. Those are some of the questions to be considered at a job summit hosted today by the White House. Joining me here in the studio to talk about the unemployment rate and what can be done to create new jobs, Dean Baker. He's co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Richard Rahn is senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Joining us by phone, Mark Zandi. He's chief economist and co-founder of Moody'sEconomy.com. Do join us, 800-433-8850. You can also send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. You can also reach us through Facebook and Twitter. Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Good morning. Good morning.
I'd like to ask each of your thoughts on what the government can do to create jobs. Dean Baker.
Well, I think, first off, the government has to do something because we're looking at a really disastrous situation. I mean, the unemployment rate's 10.2%. Everyone's expecting it to go higher. And even worse, it's projected to stay high for a long period of time. So if we look at the Congressional Budget Office projections, even in 2012, 3 years from now, they're looking at a 7.3% unemployment rate, a rate that we'd ordinarily consider disastrous. So we're in a desperate situation. We really have to do something. Now, what can we do? Well, the top of my list, I looked at Germany, a really remarkable story there. Germany actually had a steeper downturn than the United States, yet their unemployment rate didn't really rise at all. It's still roughly the same. It's 7.6%, not great, but that's the same as it was going into the downturn. And the secret there is very simple. The government gave tax credits to firms to reduce work hours rather than lay off workers. So you have this remarkable story in Germany that rather than experiencing this downturn as 10.2% unemployment, workers there are experiencing the downturn as shorter work weeks and longer vacations.
Dean Baker, he's co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. He's the author of a book titled Plunder and Blunder, The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy. Turning to you, Mark Zandi, what can the government do, if anything, to create new jobs?
Well, I'd agree that the government needs to do something, with this high rate of unemployment, which is likely to rise higher and stay high for a number of years, it's very important for policymakers to remain very aggressive. And I think there are a number of different things that government can do. I would put at the top of my list empowering the Small Business Administration to provide more credit to smaller and mid-sized businesses. These are the businesses that are key to the job machine. They're currently having trouble getting credit in order to go out and expand their operations and to hire people. And I think the SBA can, with some small tweaks to the SBA program and providing more funds to the SBA, we can get more credit to these businesses and they can create more jobs quickly.
Mark Zandi, chief economist, co-founder of Moody'sEconomy.com. He's the author of a book titled Financial Shock, a 360-degree look at the subprime mortgage implosion and how to avoid the next financial crisis. And now to you, Richard Rahn of the Cato Institute. Same question. What can the government do to create new jobs?
Well, the first thing we need to remember is the private sector that creates jobs and real jobs that add to real wealth and make us all better off. Now, there is what we call a tax wedge, which actually increases unemployment. And that is that the employer has to pay many payroll taxes, unemployment taxes. There's lots of regulations that impede employers from actually making or creating more jobs for workers. At the same time, the payroll taxes and income taxes reduce the workers' take-home pay, so you get less supply of work, and there's less demand for labor because of all these taxes and some of the regulations. So that if the government focused on reducing the size of that tax wedge, I know my colleagues here have mentioned tax credits. I prefer more across the board tax rate reductions. We could reduce our corporate income tax, which is now tied with Japan for the highest in the world. You mentioned Germany. Germany has much lower corporate income tax, as does France and a lot of other countries. That would help. just reducing or bringing in more certainty right now. Employers are very concerned about all these new taxes on the horizon. At the end of this coming year, tax rates are programmed to go ahead and jump. That is the end of the Bush tax rate reductions. The health care and cap and trade bills both contain many tax increases. All this will discourage employers from adding workers.
Richard Ron, he's senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Mark Zandi, give us a snapshot of the U.S. jobs picture. How did the unemployment numbers, for example, compare with the overall economic picture?
It's bad. The unemployment rate in October was 10.2%. And, of course, that doesn't really do justice to the stress in the labor market. If you consider all the people who are underemployed, for example, people who are working part-time because they can't find a full-time job or are so discouraged that they're not even looking for work and therefore not counted as unemployed, we're up to 17.5%. That's 27 million Americans that are unemployed or underemployed. And the stress is really across the board, across nearly every single industry, every occupation, in every corner of the country, unlike any other recession that we've been through since the Great Depression of the 30s. There is no region of the country, no significant region of the country that's doing well. So this is a very broad-based, severe, and now increasingly lengthy job market downturn.
And Dean Baker, what can you tell us about the aims of the White House Job Summit today? What are the objectives there?
Well, I think the Obama administration recognizes, I mean, obviously they're concerned about the economy. They're also obviously concerned about the next election, and they don't want to be facing an electorate come next December or November with double-digit unemployment. So the question is, can you do something to sort of get the ball rolling? I give them credit. Their stimulus was important. We'd be in worse shape today without that. I think everyone who's looked at it carefully agrees that. But the point was, it didn't do enough. We still have very bad unemployment. Basically, the situation was worse than they had anticipated when they planned the stimulus. And on top of that, I think the stimulus, even at the time, many of us felt it wasn't large enough. So I think they're looking to some extent, go back to the drawing board, go through the old ideas again, see if there's not a new way to attack the problem in a way that affects the economy and creates jobs quickly.
Do you think there's any consensus there among the people who will be gathered that perhaps another stimulus is called for?
I think most people feel you have to do something. So, yeah, I think there is a consensus in that respect. Stimulus has gotten a bad name. I'm not quite sure why. It's sort of like you want the economy to grow. That's bad. But in any case, doing something to create jobs, I think there is a view we have to do something.
And yet, Richard Ron, you're going back to saying cut taxes. Wasn't that the theme of the Bush administration? And isn't that how we got here in the first place?
Well, let's go. There's several questions here that have come up. One is, did the stimulus work? I think absolutely not. If you take a look at the original projection by President Obama's economic advisors, they argued if we had a stimulus program, the unemployment rate would reach a maximum of 8%. They said without it, we'd have a maximum of 9%. We now have an unemployment rate of 10.2%. Historically, these have not worked in the past. When I was a doctoral student at Columbia University, we were all trained in Keynesian economics, which is now back in fashion. But it didn't work, and a lot of us, after looked at the data years ago and sort of switched our views on what does work and what doesn't. If you look at the empirical evidence, the increases in government spending are usually part of the problem, not part of the solution. With the Obama's, President Obama's job summit today, I'm not keen on what they've done. First of all, they've biased their group. They have lots of labor groups. They don't have the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Many years ago, I was chief economist of the U.S. Chamber, and I've worked with business groups, and I'd like to see more business representation. They invited two Nobel Prize winners, but the two they invited are arguably the most leftist Nobel Prize winners of the last 30 years, and there's many other Nobel laureates in economics who have very different views, and I think they should have had a broader spectrum of views than they will be getting today.
Dean Baker.
I just want to say very quickly on the point whether stimulus works. We could have a long argument on that one.
Right.
But just very quickly, in terms of the forecast, they just had been overly optimistic in their forecast. You could see that because the economy was losing 600,000-700,000 jobs a month through last winter. So they made these forecasts back in December. The stimulus didn't even become law until March. So you can't really blame them on that one.
Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Do join us. I look forward to hearing your questions and comments. 800-433-8850. And welcome back. The White House is holding a job summit today, drawing together business leaders, financial experts, labor leaders to talk about jobs, what can be done, what cannot be done. Mark Zandi, you recently outlined what you think it's going to take for this economy to make the leap from recovery to expansion. Do you, as an economist, agree with those who have said that the employment numbers will be the last part of the recovery?
Yes, I think that's our historical experience. What happens is the GDP, the value of all the things that we produce, begins to rise. That occurred in the third quarter, and we're on track for another gain in the current quarter, the fourth quarter. And then what happens after that historically is that employment stabilizes. And I think that will happen early in 2010, particularly if policymakers do come forward with a bit more help for the job market. And then by next summer, perhaps fall, I think unemployment will peak. And by this time next year, we'll have enough job growth that the unemployment rate will start to come down. So I think that is the most likely script that will play out, again, particularly if policymakers come forward with more help.
So what specifically do you believe could be or should be done now?
Well, I mentioned more help for small businesses.
Right.
Through credit. I think Dean made a good suggestion. I'd have a twist on that and and provide incentives through unemployment insurance to have work share so that people don't lose their jobs and more likely to lose hours and spread the pain around. I think I'd also provide more help to state and local government. They have tremendous budget problems. If they don't get more help, they will be cutting lots and lots of jobs. State and local governments are among the largest employers in the country. And I think I'd also help provide more help to unemployed workers. Many people who lose their jobs next year, unless we change the law, will not get extended benefits, and I think that would be a very serious error. So I think if we make I should also mention a job tax credit. I think we should cut taxes temporarily, but only for those businesses that expand their payroll. So if we do those plethora of things, I think the outline of the outlook I presented will come to pass.
Now, what about the ideas that you've heard from Richard Rahn, this so-called tax wedge, which would include cutting payroll taxes and overall reducing the size of what he calls the tax wedge?
Well, the job tax credit is in spirit suggesting. It is temporarily reducing payroll taxes, but specifically for businesses that decide to expand their payroll. So what you're doing here is trying to incent businesses to actually increase the size of the payroll, to go out and hire, and that's the key problem right now. So that would be the key proposal that I would suggest that, at least in spirit, is consistent with his views that he's expressed.
Dean Baker, what about direct job creation? Does it make sense for the government to be able to do that as well, especially for the unemployed sector, which is quite high among 19 to 24-year-olds?
Absolutely. I realize this has a very bad rap. So politically, you know, this for whatever reason, you know, actually, you know, my mother's generation, they have good memories of the Works Progress Administration Civilian Conservation Corps. But for whatever reason, that has a bad rap politically here in town. But when you look at a lot of these areas, you look at the situation of a city like Detroit, 25% unemployment for young teens, you know, you're talking over 40%. Unless you're willing to tell a whole generation of people, well, you just grew up in the wrong place at the wrong time, we have to do something there. And we know there'll be some waste. There'll be some people that are, you know, irresponsible. Fox is going to have the picture of the people drinking beer in the park when they're on, you know, that's going to happen. But if we could help, you know, 80, 90% of the people that, you know, we give employment to and 10 or 15% wasted, to my mind, that's a really good deal.
But how do you do that without increasing the deficit?
Well, I think realistically we have to say we need larger deficits today. That's not the problem right now. Down the road, we will have to do things about the deficit. But we're not suffering because of a deficit today. We could see people are buying U.S. bonds, 10-year treasuries, 3.5% interest. That's less than what they were paying back in 2000 when we had a huge surplus. So the deficit isn't the problem right now.
Richard Rahn, you're almost in agony as you hear that increase the deficit.
This idea of the tooth fairy economics that, you know, spending all this money doesn't cost us anything, it causes a huge problem. First of all, I think we have to understand the nature of the problem. You asked earlier, why did we get in the recession? Well, there's a commission that has been created by the government to take a look at this, and a lot of their preliminary work is already in. We had a great expansion of the money supply after the recession early in this decade. Too much money. That turned into a way for two government-sponsored corporations, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, to create an artificial demand for a lot of subprime mortgages. And we ended up, as we all know, with a mortgage bubble. And housing prices soared for almost a 10-year period, way above what we normally expected with gains in income. And distinguished economists like Vernon Smith, Nobel laureate, have looked at the size of this bubble. We know that house prices have to come down to get back to the equilibrium level. That's painful. And too many people bought houses they could not afford. And you have to get your prices back. This is a classic credit expansion we've gone through. And the classical economists wrote about this over the last century, time and time again, too much money ends up in a bubble. And then the prices have to come down, and that's painful because people lose their jobs. But until those prices get back to an equilibrium level, people will continue to lose their jobs. Now we're creating a new bubble. The interest rates are far too low. The Fed is, again, cranking out huge quantities of money to fund all the stimulus. We're seeing that bubble this time in the stock market. And people are rushing in, and stock prices have been going up. I think we're going at some point, and I can't tell you the date it's going to happen, but we're going to see a reversal there, and we'll go through another one of these cycles.
Mark Santi, I'd be interested in your thoughts on a new bubble and the idea that you cannot add more money to the deficit to create new jobs.
Well, no, I don't think a bubble is being created in the stock market. I'm not, I don't think there's a reason for worry about what's going on in the equity market right now. In fact, I take some solace in it. So, no. The deficit, I think the deficit is our most serious problem, long-term economic problem, and we do need to address that. But having said that, I think we can't really address it unless the job market stabilizes. If we continue to lose jobs, if unemployment continues to increase, and the economy slides back into recession, then the deficits will be measurably larger and our problems measurably greater. So we have to bring an end to the decline in jobs. And I think with some judicious tax cuts, some judicious spending increases, all temporary, we can stabilize the job market, get the economy rolling again, and then it's at that point we need to be very, very focused on what we need to do to get the size of these deficits down. But that's something that's going to take a while to do, and we're going to have to do it over the next decade. We can't do it all in 1 year, and we shouldn't.
Dean Baker.
I was just going to say, I agree in part with Richard's analysis. I was on your show back in 2002 first talking about the bubble. I agree. We had a very serious housing bubble. We had very serious economic mismanagement from the Federal Reserve Board. I don't agree about the role in Fannie and Freddie. They actually were not the leaders in the subprime sector. So that was really the private issuers of mortgage-backed security. But the idea somehow we're going to make 15 million people be unemployed because the Federal Reserve Board messed up in how they dealt with the housing bubble, that doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, they're suffering already because they lost their house. Should they also lose their job? I mean, this just doesn't seem like good economic policy.
One question, and then we'll open the phones. Dean Baker, critics of today's meeting are calling it a publicity stunt. How do you see it?
Well, obviously, President Obama is doing it to try and say he's serious about jobs. At the end of the day, he's going to be judged by what he does. So
is there a downside to the meeting?
Well, he's going to have pressure to do something, and this amplifies it. I mean, it's already out there. You don't have 10.2% unemployment without people being concerned about jobs, but this creates the expectation he will do something.
Richard Vaughn.
Well, as I said, the Judge Summit, I think, would have more credibility if he had a broader spectrum of opinion and it was more balanced. Again, I think most of us know what the fundamental problem is, and as I've laid out, and I think we all agree that tax wedge needs to be reduced. We can argue about whether tax credits or across-the-board tax increases are more efficient, I think, across the board. But again, that's a debatable item.
Mark Zandi, a useful summit for the American people to see?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's necessary. You know, clearly, it's political. But I think it will jumpstart the legislation that will lead to some economic policies that will get the job market going again. So, political, but real substance here as well.
All right. We're going to open the phones now, 800-433-8850. Please send your email to drshow@wamu.org. First, let's go to Fort Myers, Florida. Good morning, Doug. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'd like someone to address the fact that for the middle-aged people that are highly skilled but undereducated, that had jobs and had mortgages, they can't get hired now because the health insurance costs are so expensive for someone that's 40 or 50 years old the young people with no skills are getting hired because of that difference. The other thing is, here in Florida, the cities, counties, and state are increasing fees tremendously. Unemployment tax for small businesses went up 1,000% recently. That's hurting hiring and jobs. And also, we've got a flood of military people that is, at some point are going to be coming home and hitting the job market.
Thanks for calling, Doug. Mark Zandi.
Well, yeah, I'll tackle one of those, one aspect of what the caller said, and that is the stress that local government is under. Local governments across the country are suffering significantly as property tax revenues fall, given the collapse in housing values and commercial real estate values. And so they're trying to raise revenue in other ways, and he mentioned a few that are, you know, damaging to the job market. And therefore, I think it is important for, as part of the federal response to this, to provide more help to state and local governments so that that those cuts in those tax increases and those fee increases are limited, because they are a very significant problem for small business creation.
Mark Zandi, MoodysEconomy.com, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. A caller now in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Hi there, Barry. Thanks for joining us. Go right ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Certainly.
I love your program.
Thank you.
I'm talking about that tax wedge and the analysis that was made that Germany and France have higher corporate tax rates. But when people talk about that, they never talk about the fact that France or Germany don't project their military around the world and don't have that expense. How do we, justify our, deficits while we're continuing to spend that much on a military projected around the world that these other countries don't have to deal with?
Dean Baker.
Well, 2 points on that. First off, just to clarify the issue about tax rates, they actually have lower tax rates. Now, one of the interesting points here is that although the United States does have a relatively high corporate tax rate, we actually don't get more. Our corporations don't pay a higher share of their profits in taxes than most of the other countries. It's because we have a lot of loopholes, and I think it'd be a great thing to lower the rate, get rid of a lot of the loopholes. Now, the second point, the issue about the military, the defense, this is a big expense, and it's very disturbing. We could have an argument, and I'm not the person to be here on that, about whether it was a good idea to be in Afghanistan, Iraq, but the point is these are big expenses, and there's been very little discussion. And I just looked back the other day. If you go back before September 11th, the projections for military spending in 2009 were 3.4 percentage points less as a share of GDP. That's about $500 billion a year. So we're, again, comparing today with our budget deficits with where we thought we'd be, before September 11th, $500 billion of that deficit is due to military spending that we didn't anticipate.
Richard Rahn, do you want to comment?
Well, it's true. If you're going to spend more on the military, you have to spend less on other things. I mean, there's just the world's one of trade-offs, and we have to make judgments about priorities. My concern is now the Congress is trying to spend on everything, and that's going to lead to very serious long-term problems. You will have a great rise in interest rates. We're likely to have a big rise in inflation in the future. Your earlier caller had mentioned the health insurance problem in Florida. One thing it could be done and should be done is to allow people to buy health insurance across state lines. A lot of areas of the country have much lower health insurance costs, and people need to be able to buy health insurance that fits their own particular needs, what the structure of their family is, what their income levels are, and there are too many mandates in many of the state health insurance programs outlined, which really increase health insurance costs beyond what is needed.
Mark Zandi, how much do you think that would help?
Well, that's a very complicated question about healthcare policy.
Yeah.
I don't know if that particular proposal would do the trick, but it is true that the uncertainty with regard to healthcare costs, given the debate about healthcare reform, is an issue with respect to job creation, and it's probably broader than that. I characterize it as being policy uncertainty. There are a lot of big policy questions up in the air: healthcare, energy policy. We need a piece of tax legislation to address the tax increases that are coming down in early 2011. There's financial regulatory reform. There's just so many things going on, and I think particularly for big business, it's difficult for them to make decisions about expanding and hiring when those policy balls are in the air. So hopefully policymakers can maybe take one of those two balls out of the air or nail these other ones down so that we get some certainty, and I think that would help get these bigger businesses hiring again.
Dean Baker, how much do we know about any of the specific proposals that some of the participants are going to put forward today?
Well, you have a lot of people that have put things on paper. I mean, there's a specific, Mark Zandi was referring to a job tax credit. My friends at the Economic Policy Institute put a proposal out there. I know it's being considered in Congress and by people in the Obama administration along the lines that Mark was talking about. I've put out a proposal there for a credit for shorter work hours. That bill's been introduced in Congress today, in fact, by Representative John Conyers. So there are specific proposals out there.
Dean Baker, he's co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. We'll be back with your calls, your email. I look forward to hearing from you.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, promoting lifelong family connections for children and youth, on the web at aecf.org. By the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. And by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.
Promoting peace in Afghanistan with books. The best-selling author of Three Cups of Tea explains why education, especially for girls, could be the most effective strategy in the war. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. As we talk about job creation, that's the hope as the White House holds a job summit to discuss the best ways to go about doing that. Here in the studio, Dean Baker of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, Richard Rahn of the Cato Institute. On the line with us, Mark Zandi, chief economist, co-founder of MoodysEconomy.com. Here is an email from Marguerite. She says, I'm glad you're having this program. I'm surprised at the timidity of the solutions being proposed. I'm especially surprised at your only liberal's position, that of Dean Baker. We hear constant references to the Great Depression, but no reference to solutions that the New Deal provided. Massive job creation in the public sector that did, in fact, revive the economy. The New Deal gave us public parks, bridges, schools, post office, theaters, and art. We know our infrastructure is badly in need.
Well, obviously, those were effective in many ways in the New Deal. But keep in mind, the Depression lasted from 29 to well, 41, 39, depending where we want to date the end exactly. That gave a lot of opportunity to have big projects like that. And certainly, we're better off having those than not having those. I certainly hope we don't have to look at 10 years of prolonged double-digit unemployment.
But how come right at the outset we kept hearing about, quote, shovel-ready programs? What happened to them?
Well, I have to say, I've been very disappointed that the lack of ambition, you know, certainly President Obama's proposals and then Congress, I think there's been a lot of fear. I would have loved to have seen us move more quickly, more ambitiously. Again, not necessarily recreating the New Deal, but there were a lot of things we could have done that I think would have jumpstarted the economy more quickly. One of the things we were talking about, healthcare, I would love to have seen a credit that would have allowed basically employers to give healthcare to everyone that didn't already have it, you know, provide them the credit to cover the cost, and then do that as we work out the mechanics of a longer-term reform.
Richard Rahn.
Well, Dean pointed out that we had double-digit unemployment for 10 years during the New Deal, 1930s. It was the only decade in American history where real per capita incomes did not grow, only time in our history. The New Deal programs did not work. And, of course, we ended up with World War II. We don't want to go through that kind of solution. We know basically what works. We had a good example, again, with Ronald Reagan. And I know my colleagues here are probably not great fans of President Reagan, but
I did a lot of good things.
Yeah, but he did a lot of great things.
I'll admit to not being good.
And we had a prolonged recession, actually from 1979, from the second quarter of 79 to the fourth quarter of 1982, there was no real growth over that 2.5 year period in the American economy. The tax cuts finally kicked in 1983 and 84. The economy took off. We had a 7.6% growth rate in 1984. Unemployment came down very sharply, and also inflation came down very sharply. We've got models out there that worked, and not only in this country, but countries around the world. And I think we ought to look at a little bit of economic history of what worked and not jump back to the New Deal, which didn't work.
All right. Let's go to Harvey in Ann Arbor, Michigan, certainly one of the states hardest hit by unemployment. Harvey, go right ahead.
Yes, I want to know if there is a new stimulus package approved by Congress, how can we put strings on it so that we have accountability for what that money needs to be done with so that it gets into the public's pockets, not into big corporations and banks? I wonder if that's feasible and what our guests feel could be said to the once we get that new stimulus.
Mark Zandi, will we get new stimulus? And if so, what kind of accountability can we expect?
Well, I'm hopeful, and I think we will get more steps to help the economy. It may not be a package like the stimulus package was that we passed back this past February, but I think we will get more help. And the various policy proposals being put forward are targeted, help to unemployed workers so that they don't have to significantly pull back on their spending, which would create problems for the broader economy. More help for state and local governments so that they don't have to raise taxes and cut their own jobs and their own spending. A jobs tax credit for businesses that specifically increase their payrolls. More help for the SBA so that they can give loans to small businesses, the same businesses that are going to create jobs. So I think if we do those kinds of things, they're very targeted, and therefore we will have accountability. And that's not to say that we shouldn't be very careful, and there should be very careful, there should be a lot of transparency and accounting. But I think if it's targeted, the caller will be more satisfied with the results.
Dean Baker.
A couple quick things. So just on accountability, I think the administration does deserve a lot of credit for being very open. They've put all these things up on the webs, all the contracts up on the webs. And people should distinguish between the stimulus passed in February and the TARP, the money, the loans that were made to the banks last fall. Very, very different issues. The stimulus was not going to banks. The other point, I just want to go back. I was not saying the New Deal was a failure. I'd say it helped. It just wasn't big enough. And, you know, in that sense, I don't think it's a perfect model, but it certainly made the country much better off. And there are really two stories in the Depression. The economy was plunging 29 to 33. It actually grew very rapidly, double-digit rates, 33 till 37, when we had concerns about the deficit and President Roosevelt cut back. So the record there is a very mixed one.
Diane, can I just jump in?
Sure.
Okay, about the New Deal. You know, I think the lesson from the 1930s is that we need to be very aggressive, that the reason we suffered a depression in the 30s is because policymakers, the Federal Reserve and fiscal policymakers, were not aggressive. In fact, they raised taxes in the mid part of the decade, and that's what caused the second leg down of the Depression. So I think the lesson of the 30s is that policymakers need to remain very, very aggressive and ensure that the job market is back up and running and that the coast is clear before exiting out.
All right. To Eureka, California. Good morning, Anthony. Thanks for joining us.
Dr. Diane, Dean, good morning and happy holidays.
Good morning, sir. Go right ahead.
Your topic today is job creation, so let me give you two resolutions and make one comment. Resolution one, a Keynesian economics are putting solar panels on 67% of the houses in this country and put a third of the bridges back to repair. Number two, how do we finance that, Anthony? By nationalizing the 12 Federal Reserve banks.
And that's his comment, Dean Baker.
Well, I agree very much with the first part. I mean, whether 67% is a realistic number, I think there's a lot to be done. And we are doing some of this in terms of promoting weatherization, increased use of clean energy, and we could do more that way. Again, there'll be some waste. We could always point to that, but I think it's worth it. Nationalizing the Fed, I do want to change the structure of the Fed, but I don't think there's money to be had there. It's simply a question of accountability.
And, of course, Ben Bernanke is on the Hill today, Richard Vaughn.
Yes, well, the Fed is actually a government institution. It's it's hard to nationalize something that's already the government. I think probably all of us would like to see major changes in the way the Fed operates.
And that's the subject for another program.
Okay. Just one thing with the New Deal. Mark correctly pointed out, during that you had two major tax increases in the early years when President Hoover was in power, and then again when President Roosevelt. And I'm afraid that we're going to make that same mistake if we allow the Bush tax cuts to expire at the end of this coming year. And I actually agreed with Dean's forecast about what's going to happen in the economy. It'll get stronger during this next year, and probably unemployment will peak out near the end of the year. But then if you allow those tax increases to go through, we could be right back in the soup. Same thing happened in the 1930s.
Richard Ron, here's another comment on the taxes from Bruce, who's in Holland, Michigan. He says the single largest part of the stimulus package was tax cuts, over one-third of those dollars. If the stimulus is not working, and parentheses, I think it is, he says, then that invalidates the argument for further tax cuts, doesn't it?
I'll ask any of their listeners out there, did you get a tax cut? We didn't have tax cuts. We had avoidance of future or programmed tax increases. And most people did not get any kind of significant tax cut.
Dean Baker.
Well, there was a tax cut. One could argue whether it was large enough. The Making Work Pay tax cut had averaged, I think it was $45 a month. And it was done as a payroll deduction rather than a rebate check, because there's research showing that people would spend more of that. And the evidence is spending did increase, even though if you look at before tax income, it actually fell. So to my mind, it did work.
I want to take a caller in Fairfax, Virginia. Jeanette, you've been waiting a long time. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Diane. I love your show.
Thank you.
I was calling to ask the experts about the jobs that are being outsourced overseas. that seems to be a subject that isn't discussed a lot these days. But everything from manufacturing to customer service jobs, technology, graphic design, anything that employers can buy at a lower price outside of the U.S., they seem to be doing that to offset some of these costs. Is there any policy or anything that's going to be discussed at the job summit today that's going to talk about closing off the job leakage to other countries?
I think that's an excellent question. Mark Zandi.
Yes, there is a session at the summit about exports. I mean, we are losing jobs because of competition with overseas businesses, but we're also gaining jobs because we are exporting more. In fact, one of the now most principal sources of growth, and certainly what will be a very, very important source of growth going forward, are exports. The rest of the world is growing very rapidly, particularly in Asia and emerging economies in South America, and we need to produce the things that they will buy, and I'm confident that we will. So we are it's in our best interest to keep markets open so that we can take advantage of that stronger export growth. And there is a session at the summit to try to consider what policies would promote exports in that activity longer run.
But promoting exports is one thing. Promoting job growth here in this country is another, with that job leakage going on, Dean Baker.
Well, it is a big issue, and that's manufacturing sector has been particularly hard hit in this downturn. We've lost around 2 million manufacturing jobs. And in fact, that goes back from the late 90s. We're down about 50% in the number of manufacturing jobs in the country. It really is incredible. And to my mind, the dollar is a really big part of that story. Some people are concerned about the falling dollar. I see that as a very good thing. That is the only way we get our trade deficit closer to balance. I'm much more concerned, in fact, about the trade deficit than the budget deficit.
Richard Vaughn.
Well, I'm not concerned about the trade deficit. Let me give you an example I think people can really understand. And that is, if you go into Walmart and you want to get a pair of cotton pants, blue jeans or whatever, you can get those very inexpensively, maybe $15. The cotton almost certainly was produced in Mississippi and Texas. We're the world's largest cotton exporter. China's the world's largest cotton importer. The cotton is put on U.S. railroads, sent to ships in the port of Long Beach, sent to China, where it's fabricated into cloth, into pants, sent back here, and we buy the pants in Walmart. And what you have is, this is the world economy working as it should. Each country does the thing it adds the most value. As a result, we can buy clothing very inexpensively. The money you save on clothing by buying it from elsewhere enables you to buy a lot of other goods and services produced here at home, and we get a net gain in jobs from international trade.
Richard Vaughn of the Cato Institute, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Mark Zandi.
Yeah, I was just going to say another lesson from the 1930s was that we should not put up protectionist barriers. One of the lessons we all learned going through school was that the Smoot-Hawley Act of that period closed down global trade, and that exacerbated the plight that we were in. So it's also very clear now that we should avoid erecting any kind of barrier and work very, very hard to reduce barriers. Now, there are some things that are clearly unfair, and Dean was alluding to the dollar and our dollar relationship with the Chinese currency. Now, clearly, the dollar is overvalued against the Chinese currency, and that should change. And hopefully, the Chinese will continue to pursue a policy of revaluing their currency to make it more fair. But to erect trade barriers would be the precisely wrong thing to do at this time.
Do you see indications that the Chinese are willing to move in that direction, Richard Vaughn?
Well, the Chinese have a problem, and that is when we buy, let's say, the pants from Walmart, we spend dollars. They take those dollars, and in turn, a lot of them come back here to buy U.S. Treasury securities. They have now roughly $1 trillion of U.S. financial assets, primarily U.S. government assets. Those dollars, those treasury securities, are used as the reserve for the Chinese banks. And if they try to revalue their currency or actually increase it against the value of the dollar, that means the value of their bank reserves fall, and they're in a dilemma. And people say, well, China, go raise the value of your currency. Well, it causes them enormous problems, and there's limits to how much they can do.
Dean Baker.
Yeah, I don't see China's banks as being particularly strained right now. Actually, they have around $1.5 trillion in dollar reserves. But China's actually been remarkably agile in coming out of this downturn, and they're growing almost as fast, or in fact as fast, as they did going into it. I think that China could fairly easily adjust to a period of revaluation of their currency, which actually they had been doing. They just have to accelerate the pace.
No, we've got to stop.
I'm afraid. Dean Baker of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, Richard Vaughn at the Cato Institute, Mark Zandi, chief economist, co-founder of MoodysEconomy.com. Let's hope that positive things come out of this White House conference, and those who are feeling the heat of unemployment hear some good news coming out today. Thank you all so much. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.